prior to that, I was very much a pro-choice person. And I did not work for Planned Parenthood, but I did spend a lot of time volunteering for them. And during a period of years when I lived in Montana, helped them to raise some money while I was there. But then in 2012, my husband and I joined the church.
Welcome to Tulsa Time with Bishop Konderla. My name is Derek Lissy, and I am your host. Today on Tulsa Time, we have a special guest, Angela Koppenhaver, who is the founder of Human From Day One and We Teach Think. Angela, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here in Tulsa.
Angela just finished a hour-long presentation here at the Chancery to people who were invited by Pat Fike and the Diocesan Council of Catholic Women. I think they saw you at their last meeting, the national meeting.
Correct.
Yeah. And so invited you to come here. So we're going to ask her to share with us a little bit about herself and the work that she does, and we'll all benefit from that.
Yeah, very good. Well, I would like to start by saying that I didn't start off as a pro-life individual. That very much in my life prior to becoming Catholic, so that will let everyone know that I'm a convert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The crazy converts, right? We're the ones that do crazy things. But prior to that, I was very much a pro-choice person. And I did not work for Planned Parenthood, but I did spend a lot of time volunteering for them. And during a period of years when I lived in Montana, I, you know, helped them to raise some money while I was there. But then in 2012, my husband and I joined the church. And when I became Catholic, then being Catholic and pro-choice don't go very well together.
Right.
So I just kind of moved to the middle. I didn't really move me all the way over to being a pro-life champion. And I thought, you know, I really felt in my heart that God had called me to evangelize. I went to work for Spirit Catholic Radio in Nebraska as a development director and spent 4 years doing that and thought, you know, this is it. I found my spot. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And then about 4 years into that, one of my volunteers brought me the 40 Days for Life book to read, which I know 40 Days for Life is near
good
dear
friends.
To you.
Yeah.
And so she brought it in very exuberant, wanted me to read it, and, you know, actually had put slots for you to sign at the back of the book when you were done and to pass it along to somebody else.
Oh, wow.
So the whole time she's in my office saying, well, we're so excited about this. We want you to read it and then sign it and give it on to someone else. And I'm smiling outwardly, you know, thinking, okay, great. You know, and I'm telling her, thank you, Mary. I appreciate, you know, I love to read. But my internal talk was like, I totally do not want to read this book. You know, this is, I'm ignoring that part of my past and have been doing a very good job of ignoring it for 4 years now. And, but I knew that I would have to eventually tell her that I read it. You know, she's going to come back and ask.
Yeah.
And so when I got to chapter 33, the title of that chapter is Take It Personal. And I as I said in the presentation earlier, it should have been titled Take It Personal, Angela, because it was a chapter about a grandmother in Helena, Montana, whose granddaughter was scheduled for an abortion at the facility there in Helena. And as I said earlier, I was actively helping Planned Parenthood of Montana when I lived there, and I knew what that facility looked like. I have been there, you know, and I just, as soon as I read those words, the hair stood up on my arms and I started to cry. And it's not very long. It's 3 or 4 pages. It's not a very long chapter, but by the time I was done, I honestly had to leave work that day just because I was just overcome with grief. And thinking to myself, you know, what have I done? What have I paid for with my money? And who have I led away from Christ with my poor example
yeah.
was what was really troubling my soul
sure.
at that point. So that was the beginning of my soul searching and yeah. the beginning of what I call my second conversion, my pro-life conversion.
Yeah. And you had, remind me, your professional background, even prior to all of this, is in radio. Is that it?
Well, I worked actually for a large transportation company worldwide that most people will recognize by their brown uniforms. I was a sales and marketing manager for them. And so that was my background prior to going to Catholic radio.
Because that's what we were talking about in the earlier presentation, is the kinds of messages that We Teach Think has put together in the form of commercials and also still shots mm-hmm. and so forth. But they're messages that have a really sophisticated understanding of how people form thoughts and opinions, and thus the messages are crafted in a manner that helps people to really deal with and get past their natural defenses.
Right.
Because typically we come at things in a blunt sort of way, and all it does is cause everyone to throw their defenses up and we right. stay in our divisive camps.
Yeah.
But you guys have a way of getting past that, so you might tell us a little about that.
Right. Well, when I started doing the research, I knew what the pro-abortion side was doing mm-hmm. marketing-wise, but I really didn't know what was going on with the pro-life group. So when I started doing the research, what I really came to find that almost 100% of the energy in the pro-life arena was towards what I call abortion-determined individuals. Mm-hmm. 40 Days for Life, Sidewalk Advocates, you know, all the people that are out there trying to stop the tragedy today.
Yeah.
And we very much need to continue doing that because sure. we are a long ways from this topic being unthinkable.
Yeah.
But with my business background, you know, there's three groups in a business. You've got your customer base, your competitor base, and you've got your potential customer base. Mm. So you need to maintain your base while you go outside of that base to basically grow market share. I mean, that's right. business 101
right.
in 30 sure. seconds.
Right.
So what I noticed was not happening once I started doing the research is that about 59% of the U.S. population is what I call middle-minded,
yeah.
are the folks that say, I don't believe in abortion personally, but that comment.
Mm-hmm.
And so 22% are the pro-life arena and about 19% only in the pro-abortion arena,
mm-hmm.
which I was just shocked when I learned those numbers because I really thought that the pro-abortion group would be much larger.
Yeah.
And it's not. So I quickly realized that something needed to be done to grow what I call pro-life market share.
Yeah.
So that we can get over that hump. Or the tipping point of the culture.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the comment that all that's required for evil to prosper is for good men to do nothing.
I love that comment.
So that's your point, is that the 59% doesn't matter that they're not all in for abortion. If they don't oppose the ones who are, they are counted more or less with them.
Yes, they're helping them mm-hmm. without knowing.
Without
knowing that they're helping them.
Yeah. And I think that that a person who is in that big middle group, many of them, it's such a divisive issue and it's such an ugly issue.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much emotion crowded into it that their being noncommittal is born out of, I just don't want to deal with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to deal with this situation right now because it's very stressful,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what we try to talk about with We Teach Think and what we've designed is we try to take the heat out of a very hot topic.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we have what we call crippling polarization mm-hmm. in our culture.
Yeah.
The two camps are so far apart that as soon as you say the word abortion, conception, you know, all the trigger words that we say, the middle group just puts their blinders on immediately and wants to get away as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So trying to find ways that we can get past that by using different words, that haven't already been learned as a bias is the trick, you know, of actually stimulating change within the culture.
Angela, could you speak a little bit more to sort of how it works, like practically, like A to B to C, to somebody who is unfamiliar with sort of
how
you guys sort of put your message
in? Let me say a comment first, just in terms of sort of like education, because I'm thinking of it from that perspective, that you know, advertising understands how to educate people about something. I mean, that's the whole point. So it's not trick in the sense of trying to get someone to do or believe something that is not already in them, but it's a way of saying, we think that if you think this through, you're going to come to this conclusion, because that's really where you are. But there's all these other things that are in the way of you thinking it through. Mm-hmm. And what you guys have found the way to do is, how can we help people to go ahead and think it through?
Right. And how do we get around their learned bias? Mm-hmm. Because we all have bias. And most of us don't understand, where did it come from? You know, I'll ask people often, on what day of your life did you learn the difference between Coca-Cola and Pepsi? Mm-hmm. You don't remember.
Right.
You know, but you know the difference between Coca-Cola and Pepsi. You didn't have a class in school. Your parents didn't have a Coke and Pepsi talk. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't do any of that. You've seen both images billions of times.
Right.
So what happens then is, once you've seen those images so many times, it induces what we call the familiarity effect. So the more times you see something, it gets embedded in your memory as familiar. Mm-hmm. Once something is familiar, then it's perceived as safe. Mm-hmm. And so you're more likely to choose a product like the, you know, if you're in the grocery store choosing a bottle of water, let's say, mm-hmm. you're likely going to choose the one that you've seen the most times.
Yeah.
Whether you're conscious of it or not, your brain will tell you, I've seen this one a lot of times. It must be safe. Mm-hmm. I'll choose this. Mm-hmm. So in order to try to get around those learned biases, we have to find different ways of talking about a topic in order to get somebody to actually hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So for example, on the very first billboard that we put up, there is a brilliant picture and it says, "This is you on day one of your life." You know, what we want, the reason why we use the term day one is because it's not learned. We don't say, this is a human person on conception day. Mm-hmm. If we said that, it would trigger those biases that have been learned by the middle-minded to say, oh, that must be a pro-life group. I'm going to protect myself and not listen. Mm-hmm. So all of the things that we've designed are, try to start where your customer is. Mm-hmm. And when we were doing the research, and I actually floated the day one picture, no one said a human person. No one said, this is what that is. Uh-huh. They said, it's a planet. They loved the colors. You know, I had all these comments about it. And honestly, my team, my design team was like, Angela, I don't think we should use this picture because no one knows what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, print the picture. This is a reason we are using it, because no one knows what it is. But so getting by those biases by using words that are not already learned is the technique, but starting where they're at. So when you ask the 59%, when does human life begin? They'll answer something like 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 20 weeks, feels pain, heartbeat. Because they've heard those terms from both sides, honestly, over and over and over again. Yeah. So it's their go-to, or the learned response that becomes a heuristic, something that is, you know, saying, oh, I know the answer to this, that they then induce in their brain and then repeat that information. So,
yeah, the picture she's referring to is an egg. And it's all done in brilliant color, an egg surrounded with a couple of sperm who have arrived. And then the caption, the text. And so I think the person is really thinking, this is a science question. Let me see what this is.
Right.
As opposed to, oh, this is that divisive issue of abortion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also you mentioned earlier, you mentioned why you said you and not.
Correct.
Yeah.
So the caption says, this is you on day one of your life. It doesn't say this is a human person on day one of its life. Because if you happen to be of that middle-minded camp, you'll say, oh, this doesn't apply to me. Or, you know, I'm not of childbearing age anymore, so this doesn't apply to me. Mm-hmm. We want the comments to apply to every person that's going to look at it. So no matter who you are, where you are, where you were born, what gender you are, what race, it doesn't matter. This is what we all look like mm-hmm. on day one of our life.
Right. And people, I think, people generally will accept and agree that even before they'll think through, well, but should this, does this mean abortion should or shouldn't be allowed? They'll nonetheless agree that, yes, I was conceived, sperm and egg met, mother's womb. Yes, I looked like that at one point.
Right.
All of those things they'll agree to before they ever get to the other questions, which are contained in other commercials
right.
and billboards.
Yeah. So we start with where, you know, your potential customer is, so to speak. And right now, we cannot agree as a culture, when does human life begin?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll reverse the question of saying, well, when is it acceptable to you for an abortion to occur? And if you're talking to the middle-minded, that will really pin them down to where they're at on that spectrum. Because most people really don't believe that abortion should occur up to the point of birth.
Right.
It's unacceptable at that point. So trying to find out where on the spectrum are they is by asking a simple question like that. When do you think it's okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, exploring more information about well, how did you come to, you know, make that decision mm-hmm. in your life? Or what information did you use to, you know, understand or, have that position?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. What are some of the greatest challenges that you see maybe that are sort of on the horizon for your work or some of the other challenges that we haven't discussed yet in sort of, you know, putting these messages out?
Sure. And one of the things is advertising's expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the first question, we've designed 4 advertising kits and anybody can go and see all of the billboards or the commercials at humanfromdayone.com. They can go and look at all of those videos on there. But the biggest challenge that we face is that it's expensive.
Sure.
And not all media likes us.
Right.
So we are not a political organization. We are a 501c3 organization. So, but when I go to place the ads on a particular television network, sometimes they will deem it political. And then I try to negotiate with them
mm-hmm.
to say that we're not a political organization. But they then will switch to, it's a sensitive topic.
Yeah.
So they, all of the networks are privately owned, so they can charge whatever they want. So
right.
that's our first number one hurdle, is that it's expensive. Number two is the other side has a lot of money.
Sure.
Just for an example, McKinsey Scott gifted Planned Parenthood in 2022, $265 million. Unsolicited.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even ask for it.
Mm.
She just gave it to them. So we're definitely fighting a David and Goliath battle.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done if we gather together and do it. So that's our biggest challenge.
And part of the, to me, part of the brilliance of the way you're going about it is that just as you say, anyone can go. We just watched earlier, we watched 4 of the spots. They're short. They don't hit you in the head. You know, they're not like that. Anyone can go on this website, download them and send them out on their Facebook feed or whatever feeds they have.
Right.
And if you ask a group of the 59% to sit and watch something like this, as a group, they're probably not going to be willing to do that. But individually, as they're mm-hmm. scrolling around through feeds, they see one of these, they might watch that. And it will nonetheless plant the seed. And that's a big part of what this is all about, is simply planting seeds.
Absolutely. And, you know, I say that all the time. All of the videos are 30 seconds, except commercial four, which is 45 seconds. Mm-hmm. So they're all very short. Mm-hmm. Usually we can get through most attention spans in 30 seconds. But what I encourage people to do is on the app, they can forward any of those videos mm-hmm. to anyone.
Right.
And it just encourage, you know, just forward an app and say, hey, I just saw this commercial. You know, what do you think? Just mm-hmm. a one-on-one conversation. Sometimes on social media is not my favorite mm-hmm. Because we get what we call instigators mm-hmm. on there. And they will needle people, you mm-hmm. know, poke, poke, poke until, you know, the bear finally starts to roar, so to speak. But so I think it's a better, you know, strategy to do this individually.
Yeah.
You know, so if 50 people download the app and they share one video, that's another 50 people. Mm-hmm. And then if they share one, you know, this is how we have got to learn to communicate with each other mm-hmm. in a respectful way and talk about very difficult topics.
Yeah.
Because we've got to shine a light on it. It's just getting worse with it being buried in the dark.
Right. Yeah. And we were talking earlier about the 7 years, I think you said, in your own case, between coming into the church and then finally coming around to seeing I can't continue down this road.
Right. God is patient, thankfully. Right. And if he had said to me, you know, prior to my conversion, you know, when I look back now, I can see all of the God incidences that happened. But at the time, thought I was homesick, wanted to come home. You know, you think you're doing, you're in control of everything. Mm-hmm. But when you look backwards, you say, oh yes, on this day, this happened and this happened and this happened. And it leads you down that path. It was 7 years mm-hmm. when I go to the day one of my Catholic conversion before I really was there. And you think, oh my gosh, if I had thought to myself, you know, quit your job, move back to Nebraska, become Catholic, then, you know, work for Catholic radio, then quit that job and jump into the frying pan mm-hmm. of the topic of abortion.
Yeah.
I would have said, no way, wrong girl.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah.
wrong. Have you been watching me at all?
Yeah.
You know, throughout right. my life, because right. I'm not the person. But that is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And God is patient. He waits until you are when you're ready.
Yeah.
You know, to present those incidences to you.
And certainly in those 7 years, you were solidly in the 59%, huh?
Solidly.
I mean, it was there. You knew it was there to think about, but you just weren't ready, able to think about it.
Well, and one of the things I mentioned in the presentation today is that there are three things we fear as humans. Public speaking, death, and being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you are going to change your position on something, that means that you have to admit that decisions that you've previously made mm-hmm. were wrong.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. So coming to grips with that, I think, is part of the journey. And so when we're talking to somebody who's a middle-minded person, mm-hmm. you know, we can't just beat them over the head with stuff because mm-hmm. it's going to cause them to have to, at some point, admit I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And that's not an easy thing to do to another individual. And that usually happens in a personal thought.
Yeah.
When they think, maybe I should do some more research about this.
Yeah.
Maybe I was not right the last time.
Yeah, I did work in Texas. I was a priest in the Diocese of Austin in Texas before I came here. And while I was there, one of the things I did sort of on the diocesan level was post-abortion healing retreats.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the things I became familiar with was the tremendous lag time between the abortion and the time when a post-abortive mother would usually come to some kind of a retreat, and the average was 12 years.
Wow.
So 12 years of carrying that, trying to sort of medicate the pain in various ways, mm-hmm. medicate having to face the grief. And that's what makes people so so emotionally taught about this, is if you've had this tremendous loss and you need to grieve, but to say, I need to grieve, means you have to face that there was a loss, which means you have to face that there was a baby.
Correct.
So all of that gets hung up, and every one of them has a community of people around them that knew about it. It may be small, just a few people, mm-hmm. but some who knew about it. And those people are also in the 59% because right. they didn't have the abortion themselves, but they were connected to someone who did and they supported them in it.
Right.
And so they're feeling some of that pressure too. So I think all of that gets caught up, which is why the approach that we teach Think is taking, which is so soft. Mm-hmm. I would call it a soft approach. We're not saying you have to think this, you have to do something, but simply consider this. Consider
yeah.
this alternative.
Yeah. yeah. We want you to consider it. So, you know, they progressively start with the this is you on day one of your life, then two. The commercial two starts with building value mm-hmm. of the preborn state. Then commercial three moves on to protecting what you value.
Yeah.
We don't protect what we don't value.
Yeah.
And this is one of the problems we're facing with all of the pro-abortion attacks right now from state to state to state, trying to enshrine abortion in everyone's constitution.
Right.
Is that the 59% right now don't understand the value of preborn. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we lose state after state after mm-hmm. state. We have to move along that continuum.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very last commercial deals with safe, legal, and rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's not rare. And so we actually have a, you know, the character at the end says, now that you know, what will you do?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's a very powerful statement because she disappears.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
And she's my granddaughter, by the way.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, when my daughter watched it the first time, she just burst into tears because she's like,
sure.
You didn't tell me that she was going to disappear.
Wow.
You know, but because I want people to understand this is not rare. It's statistically not rare.
Yeah.
And we really need to address that. So
I used to use a little talking point when I would address groups about post-abortive grief. And it had to do with the social nature of abortion generally and the relational aspects of post-abortive women, men too, but particularly women. And I would ask people to do this thought experiment. If you and a group of your friends go out to dinner one night and there's a post-abortive mother or father in the group and no one in the group knows it.
Right.
And the topic among the group at dinner turns to abortion. By the end of that conversation, how will that person feel?
Right.
Because if we're doing this right, that person will feel like, wow, this is a safe group. If I were to tell anyone in this group, they would support me. They wouldn't shun me. They would help me find resources.
Yeah.
They would understand. They would pray with me. They would forgive me, all the things. And if we do it wrong, they're going to be further entrenched into their ghetto of thinking, I can't tell anyone about this. I can't share this with anyone.
Right.
Which then just means the grief is locked in.
Yeah. Absolutely. And one of the things I do often say is that we have to bring to light remembering that one in four individuals have either participated in or had an abortion. Mm-hmm. So it's highly likely if you're out with a group of people that someone there either paid for an abortion, drove somebody to an abortion, or had an abortion themselves. Our culture has participated in this.
Yeah.
It is socially acceptable right now to have an abortion. So we have to be in tune to being the caring, loving one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think I mentioned the pro-abortion side is the one that will be telling women, you can't do this.
Right.
You don't have the money. You won't be able to finish school. You can't do this. You're not strong enough.
Yeah.
Let us help you remove your problem.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So on our side, especially people who are faith-filled, need to understand that we need to be the ones that go and say, you can do this. You are strong. A pregnancy is not a disease, and I will help you.
Mm-hmm.
Or I will help you find what resources you need to get through this.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So we've got to be that caring part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because we are, even if a person goes through with it, then they can come to us for help with grief because we weren't the ones who were saying, no, no, you don't have a problem or abortion won't be a problem for you. They can't go to the pro-abortion side to help with the grief because the pro-abortion side won't agree that there's anything to grieve.
Right.
It's the pro-life side that recognizes, yeah, we understand there's something to grieve. We wished you had not gone through with it, but now that you have, we want to be here for you to help you because you're going to be going through a tremendous upheaval in your life. Let us help you walk with you in that. Yeah.
Angela, where does your passion come from?
Well, my passion comes from when I was going through the period of time where I was really discerning, what am I supposed to do with this now that, you know, I read the chapters. And honestly, I didn't say yes right away.
Mm-hmm.
It took a good while. I said no several times. You know how we do the negotiating, like, okay, God, if I can write the business plan, then I'll do it. Right. Mm-hmm. And thinking all the time.
I'm solely thinking,
I'll never do that, you know, because that just takes too much. I'm very right brained. I'll never put that all down on paper, you know, and then 3 weeks later, it's done.
Yeah.
Okay. I did that. All right. Now, if I can complete the 501c3 paperwork, then I'll know that you really want me to do this. I certainly won't do that. It's a tax dissertation, basically, you know, but I did that, you know, so. But the thing that really was in my soul is because my grandchildren only know Catholic grandma.
Yeah.
They didn't know the pro-choice grandma beforehand. So they didn't know that. And I was terrified of them finding out, you know, that, oh my gosh, grandma, what were you thinking? That kind of thing. So that was the hardest hurdle to get over. So when I started to do it, I sat all of them down and said, you know, here's the deal. Grandma wasn't always Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed some things that were not true.
Mm-hmm.
And now I realize that. So when I start to do this, it's going to be very public. We're going to have a website. People are going to see me. Not everyone is going to like grandma.
Uh-huh.
And so there may be some times when people say to you, well, did you know that your grandma did this? And you say to them, yes, she already told me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what she's doing now.
Yeah.
Because that's how that other guy holds you down.
Yeah.
You know, yes, I did. I was a pro-abortion person in my past, but that is not where I'm at now. And I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to make sure other people don't make the same mistakes that I made.
Yeah.
So if you hear something about grandma and you don't know the answer to it, you come to me and ask, and I'll tell you
mm-hmm.
whether I did it or not. But that's the grace of God. That's the grace of forgiveness. Mm. And I think it's important for children to know that we're not perfect.
Yeah.
You know, you can't imagine your grandparents doing anything wrong. Right.
But she told, Angela told us some powerful comparisons in the presentation that are along the lines of this personal history. People of a certain age, myself included, remember the crying Native American man on the Don't Litter commercials.
Right.
And we remember all the different anti-smoking commercials and all the various things. You know, I've told the story before. I have 11 siblings.
Yeah.
we went on vacation sometimes with all 12 of us in the back of the station wagon. You just put all the seats down and nobody strapped into anything. And we all just head down the highway.
The back windshield was the prime location. That's where you wanted to be.
Right. And so there's so many examples for all of us of things that used to be socially acceptable, but through simply attention focused on it, advertising focused on it, became less and less, and now it's no longer acceptable.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The example I gave was, you know, I was a teenager when Keep America Beautiful started. And so through those commercials, if I would see somebody littering, I would not confront them because that was too dangerous.
Right.
But I would wait until they weren't there, go over and pick up whatever it was and throw it away. Now, with my children, when they were in high school, it had been running already for a good amount of time. If they see somebody littering, then they're likely to confront, you know, and say, hey, what are you doing? Pick that up. Mm-hmm. You know, with my grandchildren, when I was developing We Teach Think, I wanted to see how things change generationally. So there was about six of them around the table one night when I said, hey, you guys, did you know that when Grammy was a little girl, like if you were done eating at a restaurant or something, you know, and you were in the car with your bag, you just put the window down and just fling it out the side of the window, you know, just throw the trash out on the curb. And there was a collective gasp. Like they're, oh, Grammy, you didn't recycle? That's what they said. You know, I was expecting
not litter,
them,
recycle.
Not litter. You didn't recycle.
That's funny.
So, you know, it was perfectly what I wanted to demonstrate is that it goes from a generation that is made aware to a generation that will confront, to a generation that thinks it's unthinkable. Mm-hmm. So when we were designing the advertising for We Teach Think, because that's our goal, is to make abortion unthinkable.
Right.
I modeled it after Keep America Beautiful, Smokey the Bear, the seatbelt dummies, you know, all of these things, the mad dads and the drunk driving, all these things at one time, socially acceptable things to do, now unthinkable.
Right.
And the one thing that all of those had in common was a nationwide consistent marketing message. Mm-hmm. And that's what is lacking right now in the pro-life arena for the middle-minded people.
Sure.
Is that we don't have a consistent nationwide marketing message.
Yeah.
And that's the niche that we're trying to fill.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you've learned a lot doing this, you know, and I'm sure every day, week, month, you're learning more. But what would be your advice or something you could share to especially maybe younger folks who have a heart for this mission and who are coming up and who are like, you know, coming into the world going, how do I talk to people? What do I do, et cetera? What would be your advice or some of your greatest learns that you could offer to them?
Yeah, well, number one, download the app. Put it on your phone and share.
And it is an app.
Yeah, there is an app.
And the app, again, is called
We Teach Think.
We Teach Think.
So you just go to your Play Store, whether it's Android or iPhone, whatever,
and download it. Even I was able to do it this afternoon.
Okay, great. So you can share the videos. It's an easy way to help you talk about things. You don't have to become an expert. You don't have to design your own things. It's already there for you. So that is a tool that you can use to start conversation. The other thing, the advice that I would give is try to keep your gut out of it. As soon as your anger level goes up, people can sense that. And, you know, so our goal is to help people understand something that they don't understand. Not to tell them that they're wrong, not to tell them their past actions were despicable or whatever that is. You know, we want to really open that line of communication. And I believe that the millennials, the Gen Zs, and I call the next generation the dream loungers because, I mean, they haven't even ever been to a movie where you can't put your feet up, you know. So when they are growing up, they're going to be the ones that are the ones that have it as unthinkable because they've just grown up with it. So my advice was don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to talk about it.
Right.
You know, don't be afraid to bring it up because honestly, the majority of the people are either pro-life or somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. And just finding out where they're at in the middle is the best thing you can do. Mm-hmm. And then go from there.
That's great.
Yeah.
You know.
That is.
That's awesome. A little bit about, so we invited you to Tulsa, but maybe you could share a little bit about what your plans were for your time here in Tulsa. I know you already spoke today.
Yeah.
But maybe tell what your goals were and kind of what you spoke about. I know it's a lot mentioned here.
Right. Well,
a little bit about your visit.
Yeah. What we do is our goal is to have our advertising running in all of the 50 of the United States, mm-hmm. you know, in every city. So just getting the awareness out to a group within a city, number one, to say, mm-hmm. hey, look at our stuff. We'd like to run this in your city too. Of course, the Council of Catholic Women are fantastic. The council in Nebraska that has been instrumental in helping me to promote, you know, grow along with it.
Sure.
And then last year I spoke at Salt Lake at the national conference. And this year it's actually going to be right here in Oklahoma.
Oklahoma City.
So when I met your ladies last year in Salt Lake, I said, we have got to do something in Oklahoma because the convention's going to be there.
Sure.
In August of this year. So working with Pat and some of the other ladies mm-hmm. that are part of the Council of Catholic Women. So I'd encourage any of your listeners, please come to the convention. Mm-hmm. And while it is Catholic, you know, National Council of Catholic Women, men also come. So you can come mm-hmm. to it as well. But it's a fantastic conference. I believe it's August 13th through the 18th.
Okay.
At the Omni. And you can just look up National Council of Catholic Women. It comes right up on their page. But my goal today was to get some stuff going in Oklahoma because I definitely want it go. I want our stuff up.
Yeah.
When everyone comes from the whole United States so they can see it. So I'll be giving a presentation there.
And then other than downloading the app for those who couldn't make the conference and things like that, where can they find you? Where can they, like, what is your website again?
And, sure. And yeah. That information. It's Human From Day One. And the word one is spelled out one.com. And there's a form you can fill out on there to contact. It comes right to my email. So, you know, I regularly, if I'm at home in my office, I travel quite a bit giving these presentations, mm-hmm. But I will respond to your email. So if you want more information about how you can bring We Teach Think to your community, please just fill out that form on the website, say you want more information, and I will contact you.
Sure. Awesome. We have for many years had one women's conference every year in Oklahoma City. And this year is our first year to have one also here in Tulsa. So now we'll have one in Oklahoma City and one in Tulsa every year. They're about half a year apart from each other, so women have a couple of options.
Oh, fantastic.
But that will be, of course, another venue where you can come for these kinds of things as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Angela, we want to express our sincere gratitude for your visit and for coming to join us. Any other final messages you want to share with our listeners before we... No.
I just say, I always seek the facts, mm-hmm. you know, search for facts. Mm-hmm. Don't just readily accept the status quo, you know, seek those facts. And when I give presentations to high school kids or junior high kids, you know, I'm trying to teach them about what marketing is designed to do. Yeah. And it is to get them to buy something, whether it's an idea or a physical product.
Right.
But, you know, if buying that product is going to lead you, your soul away from God, mm-hmm. don't buy it. Well, you know.
And different kinds of, you know, advertisers use the same kinds of processes and approaches to sell vaping equipment or to sell diabetes medication.
Right, correct.
Both need to raise awareness. Both need to give some facts and so forth. But one is not real or not needed in human life, and the other is.
Right.
And so similarly here, we're using the time-tested, you know, industry-tested processes, but to tell a truth, not to spin lies.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
So.
Well, this has been Tulsa Time with Bishop Condorla. Thank you for listening, and we hope you have a great rest of your week.